What is peace? What do we mean when we use that word?
We all have the capacity to experience compassion. Every single human being has that. Recognise how we are shaped and formed by our prejudices. We all prejudge.
In the spring of 2019, live artist and theatre director Neil Bartlett spent 6 months crisscrossing the country seeking out and interviewing 100 remarkable peace workers.
If I just sit here and do nothing, this will never change.
Neil asked them to talk about their work. The voices were a wide-ranging, diverse group of people, all ages, backgrounds and fields of work. Remember that line of W.B. Yeats? He was writing as the so-called peace talks of 1919 were trying to wallpaper over the catastrophe of World War I. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Well, sometimes it's really important to remember that those lines aren't necessarily always true. Sometimes it is the best who step up to the plate, with both passion and conviction.
Yeah. But it's where that prejudgment can cause not to have a conversation with that person, not to reach out to that person, not to be kind.
Shivinda Sangira is someone who has deeply personal reasons to take action. With a keen eye for how and where to intervene in order to start getting people, in this case, young women from her own community, out of harm's way.
Activist is always a very loaded word. Mm. For some people, it's incredibly positive. And you go, oh, you're an activist. That's fantastic. Yeah. Come into my kitchen. Other people, it's, oh, activist. That sounds a bit like...
Troublemaker.
Absolutely. On the simplest level, why? Why place yourself consistently in a zone of conflict?
From the age of 14, I have, because I took a stand against my family in saying, no, I'm not marrying a stranger. And as soon as that happened and I said no, I was bullied by many members of my family. So the conflict started there. You know, why are you different? You're not going to dishonour this family. Mum will die of a heart attack. It will be your fault. You know, as a young 14-year-old, you're being told this. You're an outsider and you're questioning it. But what I held on to was my conviction that I'm not marrying a stranger. It was as simple as that for me. My mother would say, women don't have to be educated. Where you're going, you don't need an education. She meant marriage. And I'd witnessed my sisters having very unhappy marriage, suffering horrific domestic abuse. And yet that was normal. Nobody questioned it. They were sent back for the sake of this concept called honour to make the marriages work. And then when Rubina set herself on fire and she died, my family's view was it was better for her to take her life than for her to dishonour the family and leave an abusive husband. I couldn't live with myself going home and marrying that stranger and conforming to a life where there was no freedom or independence. I'd have to completely become somebody who I wasn't, who wasn't able to be a woman in her own right. Leaving home in the first 4 years, I describe it as being in a space with the curtains drawn. I could have gone home. That was a choice, and it's important. It was a choice. I was disowned. I attempted to take my life twice. I was depressed. But what changes? What's going to change? As difficult as it was, I was on the path towards freedom and independence for me. And I choose to be part of the change because I can't sleep at night knowing that I didn't try. I am finally owning the fact that I'm not using the word that I'm disowned anymore. I actually refer to myself as owned.
Having begun your work as an activist, your work has begun to take you to other places where you perceive a need to change, a bigger picture.
Yeah. Anybody who's founded a charity will know this, or if they are moved by injustice to do something, it's not a 9-to-5 thing. It becomes part of you because you live and breathe it. The catalyst was the injustice of it all. So I threw my pain, the loss, into the charity in a sense where it became my salvation.
Are there things specific to your cultural background, which I know nothing about, so no, this is an open question, that are arming you for these fights?
Well, culture for me simply means a way of life. And we're shaped and formed by our belief and value systems, and our cultural heritage and the way we were raised are going to be big influences. Within my family dynamic, there was so much oppression, and that oppression was something that I always questioned. You know, why can my brother have so much freedom and yet we can't? Why can my brother date and yet we can't? Why can my brother integrate with white British society? My mother told me the worst insult you can bring to our front door is you're behaving like a white woman. You know, these bigoted views were being instilled in us. The objective of the family was to get us to conform to that, which was rooted in notions of this is part of our culture, this is part of our tradition and our religion. And I would even question that religion, which was Sikhism. As a young person growing up, you don't really know what Sikhism stands for other than what your family tell you. I can't describe my family upbringing as something that was a horrible place to be, because it was just normal, but I was questioning these things. What is it about Sikhism that had the right to say you have to marry this stranger because it's part of the Sikh Bible? So I sought out what Sikhism was about. And, you know, Sikhism was founded in the 15th century. It was built on a foundation of equality of men and women. Men and women have the same souls. I look at it in order to find those truths to oppose what I was taught. It stands for being a warrior. You know, it stands for the equality of men and women. And that's why we all have the surname Kaur and Singh. Because again, what the gurus or teachers were saying is we are equal. I've taken away the wisdom of my mother and my father and their strengths. My father came here in the 50s with a vision. You know, he came from a strange country in the Punjab. It was a rural village. There was poverty. He took a four-week ship to travel to England, not knowing what it was going to be like, because he had this vision of, I want to make a better life for me and my children. That took guts. You know, that was about change. I love my family dearly. My mother and father were only doing what they knew was right and best. They were only doing what they were taught to do with the permissions of the community. If people in my community were speaking out as I am today, it may have given my father permission to speak out. And I see my father and my mother as a victim of that community that chose to be silent. Because my father couldn't say, no, I'm not doing this to my daughters. Because had he done that, they would have ostracized him. This is the power of silence. It paralyzes and it keeps on happening and happening. Change has to be about breaking that silence. This attitude that exists that this is part of one's culture, you know, somehow this is part of my tradition or my religion, therefore it is accepted and people turn a blind eye against it. It clouds professional judgment. It's been more of a struggle getting people to recognise this as a issue in the UK, because people cannot believe, even the decision makers and those in politics, that this is really happening in Britain. Over the years, as I spoke, more people came forward and shared their experiences. Those individual survivors of forced marriage, honour abuse, grooming, trafficking, homophobic crimes, etc., they're standing up there for those who have yet to get to the point of reporting and coming forward.
Would there be a decisive moment in your work as an activist where you could say, listen, let me tell you this story because it might help you?
Shafilia Ahmed was murdered by her mother and father at the age of 17. And Melissa, her best friend, who was a white friend, she said to me, Jasvinda, I wish somebody had come into my school and told me that this happens, and I would have understood more about Shafilia, because I thought it was just part of her culture. So something happens where you're not questioning that wrong, fearing offending, fearing rocking the boat. And she said, because had I been that person in that assembly where you speak now, I would have understood my friend more. I would have rang the helpline for her. Over 100 15 to 16 year old Asian girls went missing off one school roll in one academic year. This was in Bradford. Nobody asked where these kids had gone. You know, I raised that with the then Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, I said, if over 100 white kids had gone missing off a school roll, this country would be jumping up and down.
Yeah.
But because they were Asian, they didn't ask the question, because the attitude was, it's what they do. So that resulted in an independent investigation. Parliament conducted it. Mm. And to this day, 33 of those girls are still missing. This is about child protection. We can sit back and watch, or we can actually do something to change it. And it can be the simplest of things to start that ripple and to get it going. You don't have to have had a tragic experience that's happened to you to know that something is wrong. There are thousands more just like me who are in that space today that have yet to come forward. Have you done something to help them come forward?
Jasminda is just one of the remarkable 100 voices who are part of my marathon performance, 24 Hours of Peace. Broadcast live on Resonance FM on Sunday, the 10th of November, Remembrance Sunday, 2019. 24 Hours of Peace is an act of witness to the work of peace, challenging received ideas and creating space for different stories and different voices to be heard on that day. You can find out more on the website www.24hoursofpeace.co.uk.